Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Jason Bryan from the Short Time Wrestling Podcast and founder of the Mat Talk Podcast Network. Shows on the network are individually owned and operated, and those opinions presented and expressed may not reflect others, the sponsors, patrons, or the parent network. Find more shows about the greatest sport in the world at the Mat Talk Podcast Network at mattalkonline.com.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of Flow Wrestling, along with Andy the Beast Hamilton. This show is sponsored by Cliff Keen Athletic. That's why Andy Hamilton is the Beast, because I look to my left and I have a beautiful Beast backpack by Cliff Keen Athletic.
How do you like your Beast backpack?
Love it. I've transitioned everything over to the Beast. It's got my name on it. It's got the Flow Wrestling logo on it. I love this thing. It has more space. I love how the design is, where I can have a zipper on top and then kind of go through the computer bag on back. It's ideal for what I'm going to do with travel.
It's a big old beast.
I love this thing. So you kind of hooked that up, surprised me with it, but thanks to Cliff Keen Athletic for the Beast. I'd recommend checking this thing out. It's an awesome backpack. And as we think about Beasts, maybe a guy that needs to be mentioned is a guy that we both know well named Shane Sparks. I don't know if many people know that he actually works for Flow Wrestling. He works for Flow in the advertising department. A lot of people think of him with Big Ten, but if you have a chance and want to tag him on Twitter and mention him on anything, make sure to mention Flow Wrestling with Shane Sparks. He's quite a guy.
He is quite a guy.
Have you met anyone like Shane Sparks in your life? Because I haven't. Never seen anyone like this guy.
No, not really.
Go through your mental Rolodex. Like, who even compares to this guy as far as just, like you explained, complete energy, nonstop, and then 1 minute he'll be on going 100 miles an hour, and then he'll just go off. I mean, there's 100 miles an hour zero with him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, like people have said to me a time or two about Shane that they've thought like the high energy thing is an act, and it's not an act whatsoever. Like, roomed with him on the road several times, and when, you know, the engine doesn't like kind of cool down, it's, you know, redlining or it's shut off.
For sure. And you're right about that, because there was a point where, when he was in Big Ten, I really didn't know Shane. I thought he was full of himself and just thought, oh, he just wants to be on TV. That's not the case. This is 100% authentic Shane Sparks. Well, his real name is Shane Nabel, but he came up with the name Shane Sparks because of his energy. But this is who this guy is. What you see is real and authentic, and I think that's the best compliment you can give to that guy.
Love the guy.
He's awesome.
He's awesome.
He's awesome. Now, speaking of Twitter, and I'm going to bring this up with our guest today, Sean Bormet, who's the head wrestling coach at Michigan. I love it. What you say about Twitter is that it's a loaded gun. And I've seen this manifest itself with me posting an article about folk style and freestyle. I thought I was just going to post this article. It would be taken well. People would appreciate the take. I made the claim that folk style is tougher than freestyle. Again, not better, not more technical, doesn't take more talent. I don't think it's a higher level. I just think it's tougher for a variety of reasons. One is that it's longer, but just the writing component, just the aspects of how you have to escape and get out, and just some of the nuances that folk style wrestling has that freestyle doesn't. I got raked over the coals.
You did. You got skewered.
People thought I was making a hot take. I'm not a hot take guy. They thought I was, I mean, some were saying it was the worst take of 2021. So I'm going to be interested to ask Sean about this, because I want to get his take on what he thinks, because he's in the trenches. He's done both. He develops both. So we're going to ask Sean on the program. But I go back to that. You can't make a mistake on Twitter. Even if you just play it down the line, people can take it wrong. I've never seen anything like Twitter in my life.
People are just looking for a reason to be mad.
I know. It's so funny. There's no rational takes too. It's an irrational form in a lot of ways. And so, boy, if you're gonna delve into that medium, be ready to defend yourself often if that's the route you want to go, or just let it be and let everyone just kind of fire their shots. But it's quite an outlet, isn't it?
It's a carnival house of fun mirrors. I always say that. Like reality can get distorted by Twitter pretty quickly.
It sure can.
Like you're using that as like a gauge for public opinion.
Yeah. And boy, it's the same people kind of going back and forth, and then it blows out of control, and you see these Twitter battles and people are mad at each other. So I learned my lesson. After seeing some of the vitriol that got thrown my way for just making what I thought was an honest assessment, lesson learned. Now, other lesson learned is we are in a new era of wrestling with NIL. We have transfer portal. Just things are happening all the time. We have some great events coming up with Final X. And that's what I'd like to focus on, is what's coming up here with the World Team Trials. Back to some sense of normalcy in that, 2021, we had an Olympics and a World Championships. Now we're back to having the final product of Final X, where we are able to showcase those two events. We're going to have two events in June, Stillwater, New York City. Those are some different venues that we've had in the past. Typically, we've had one in Lincoln, Nebraska. But your thoughts going forward, I'm excited about what the World Team Trials is going to be. I love the international product. I love the process of making a world team.
I love this time of year. I'm a big freestyle fan. And I appreciate folk style too. I agree with your take that folk style is tougher. I think freestyle is more entertaining.
Yeah, but again, that wasn't the take. It was just that it's tougher. So all those things. But anyway, go ahead.
So I'm excited. I'm excited really to, before we even get to Final X, I'm really fired up about going to Vegas and especially seeing the cadet trials.
Yeah.
Because that's the tournament where people really surface, like future stars surface. And, I remember a year ago going up to Wisconsin Dells and watching Joe Seeley in person for the first time and being really, really impressed. And each time out since then, I there's nobody in high school wrestling cross country that I enjoy watching more than Joe Seeley, because the pace is super high, action is high. And that was the event where he kind of popped on my radar a lot more. And now he's the number one sophomore in the country on our big board.
It's fun to see those things. Yeah. Cadet, I'll tell you what, that's a fantastic event. I didn't really get checked into that when I was at the Gable Museum. You're just so into fundraising and being a nonprofit and you're celebrating the past accomplishments. So wasn't until I came on board with Track Wrestling, which incidentally was about 3 years ago to this day as we're recording this. But once you start getting into that world, the high school space is so fun. And I think that Cadet World Team Trials is one of the best events that you can watch and take part of because of what you just said there. So as much fun as I think it's going to be to have the senior U.S. Open, I think those Cadet World Team Trials are just going to be equally exciting, just because, hey, those Cadet World Teams, it's competitive. This is the future. You look at the track record of what those guys do in the next level, not only the juniors, but at the collegiate level. Boy, I think that's where it's at right now.
Yeah, I mean, the level of wrestling just gets better and better for young kids. Like it feels like every year it's the level gets higher. I mean, even watching Folkstyle Nationals and seeing some of the stuff there. I mean, I think that, you know, Doug Schwab's son Hayden, even like he won 14 and under at Folkstyle Nationals. Yeah. And I think in the quarters he hits a nasty inside trip. In the semis he hits a nasty lateral drop. In the finals he wins on a spladle. And it's like, holy smokes, like seventh, eighth graders doing this kind of stuff now. It just, like, you would have never seen that 10, 20 years ago.
I'm glad you brought up Hayden Schwab, because it's a topic that triggered that I wanted to bring up here. And that is, I'm just astounded how, not only how small the wrestling world is, but how these things transpire. And you mentioned the quarters. I think it was the quarters, wasn't it, where Hayden Schwab wrestled Owen Elzen's, was it?
Son, yeah. Yeah.
And Owen Elzen was part of the 2001 Minnesota team that set the record for 10 All-Americans and no national finalists. Doug Schwab was on the Iowa team. I'm just amazed at how some of these things can happen, that you have kids the same age, same weight, at the same tournament, and you're wrestling in the quarterfinals at Folkstyle Nationals.
Yeah, that's pretty cool, huh?
I mean, even just the, and it hasn't happened yet where they've wrestled, but just even the Carr Monday deal, where Nate Carr and Kenny Monday were rivals. They wrestled Iowa State versus Oklahoma State, and they wrestled in the finals of the NCAA championships twice, Big Eight finals twice. Now their sons are in the identical weight classes that you guys were as fathers for different schools. And it just, I hope that materializes. But those things happen more often than I would think. But I love those unique connections where fathers have kids and offsprings where they were rivals, and then they're wrestling on a mat at Folkstyle Nationals in Cedar Falls, Iowa. It's so cool to see. But I think you said Jordan Burroughs and Hayden Schwab are your two favorite wrestlers right now, aren't they?
I love Hayden Schwab just as a kid. He's an awesome kid.
He really is.
Yeah.
Really is fun to watch. But as we go forward here, we're still in this era that I'm glad we can say that for another cycle, at least, we get David Taylor, we get Kyle Dake. Tamara Mensah-Stock has indicated she's going to accept her final X bid. Jordan Burroughs, Kyle Snyder. We have a great group right now that is coming back for another cycle, hopefully. Adeline Gray is pregnant right now, so we won't see her at Final X. But I'm glad to see our superstars are sticking with it and not going an MMA route, that they're buying into wrestling as a profession. And I love to see that.
Gable throwing a little teaser out there, too. I mean,
what do you think about that? You think he's going to do it?
I sure hope. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see.
I'll tell you what. Whenever I see someone put shoes on the mat, I roll my eyes. Because, like, come on. You think you're really going to retire? We've seen the shoes get retracted and put back on quite
a
bit. I mean, so it's a... I don't even know if it's a nice moment anymore, because I don't think it's truly authentic. Now, if it's a 38-year-old man doing
unless it's Tom Brady putting his shoes on the mat, right? Like, and then taking them off 40 days later,
exactly.
Putting them back on.
I mean, I just never believe it anymore.
Like, when people are performing at a high level, like, yeah, if you're past your prime, but when there's a lot of gas left in the tank, like, it's, I think we're going to see Gable on a wrestling mat again.
I do too. I think he's too young, too good. I think once he
competitive.
He sees it, he's like, man, I don't want that guy to have my spot. Yeah. Like, I haven't even shown the best that I can do. But thinking about that, Gable retired 25 years ago, almost to the day, from head coaching.
Dan Gable.
Yeah, Dan Gable retired from head coaching. And he didn't have a farewell tour. He just kind of did it. And I don't want to say he went off into the sunset, because that's not who he is, but there wasn't a real farewell tour. People didn't really know. There wasn't a final farewell meet at Carver Hawk Arena, because nobody really knew. But it was about people for him, and he stuck with it. And I think we can be celebrating that, because I think his health took a priority that he's always said that if he would have stuck with it too long, he would have been dead right now. And I'm glad Dan Gable's not dead.
It makes two of us.
He's a fantastic human being. And let's just maybe reflect on that. all-time point record, still at 170. Penn State now has two teams with five NCAA champions. The team in 1997 that set the all-time point record at 170 has five champions on it. I mean, we've talked about it. Can Penn State get that record? I think it's coming closer all the time.
Yeah, I mean, when they, you know, what it used to be, Iowa, I think, what, 86 was the first team to win five individual titles, right?
That's right, yep.
And then 97, Iowa.
Correct.
Then 05, Oklahoma State.
Yep.
Now Penn State's done it in 17 and 22.
Yep.
So it used to be a once every decade thing. Penn State has done it now twice in a span of six seasons.
It's unbelievable. And my jaw drops every time you mention the semifinal stat. It's just unbelievable what they've been able to do and just push guys through to the finals and then win in the finals. It's a staggering. We've just never seen anything like it.
Mm-hmm.
It's unprecedented territory right now. Uncharted waters, and they're navigating it well, and it looks like they're going to have a solid team coming back. Moving forward to U.S. Open, let's maybe just talk about a couple highlight wrestlers that you're maybe looking forward to watching the most. I know that you get the number one seed at the World Team Trials, which will be in Coralville, Iowa, but any wrestlers stand out for you on the senior side?
Boy, I don't know, Kyle. I like I said, I've kind of been more fixated on the cadet and the, you know, lower levels. I'm looking forward to watching the stars of tomorrow. Really, and just you know, eager to see who shows up in Vegas and see what shakes out there. You know, I'm really excited for the senior stuff that's to come in May and then early June.
Chikara Winchester, world champ, is going to be at the U.S. Open at 55 kilos. Kayla Mirico, who made an Olympic team, will be at 62 kilograms. So there'll be some good wrestlers in the mix, but we will keep you updated on this program. You can check out flowwrestling.org. Any final thoughts before we get to Sean Bormet, our guest?
No, let's bring Sean in. Let's hear from Cliff Keen and then bring Sean in.
This spring, get into freestyle, Greco, and club wrestling seasons with some new singlets from Cliff Keen. Cliff Keen has everything you need to hit the mats, from singlets, headgear, and warm-ups, to knee pads and workout gear. Cliff Keen is the dependable brand to see you through. And don't forget, on-the-mat subscribers can save big at CliffKeen.com. Go to CliffKeen.com and use the coupon code ONTHEMAT, one word, at checkout, and take 20% off your order. Yep, coupon code ONTHEMAT gets you 20% off, and there is no deadline to order for On The Mat listeners. Just go to www.CliffKeen.com and click Shop Wrestling.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Our guest today is Michigan head coach Sean Bormet. Sean, how are you?
I'm doing great.
What's going on? I mean, it's been a wild ride. NCAA championships here in your backyard in Detroit, Michigan. And here we are in April getting ready for the U.S. Open. What has it been like since you placed second at the national tournament until now?
Yeah, it was a quick turnaround. You know, pretty much, you know, dove right back into recruiting. You know, starting to get guys ready for U.S. Nationals. We have an early semester here, you know, early wrap up. So, we only have about 3-4 weeks of school after the NCAA tournament. So, you know, there's a lot of focus on our team, just kind of getting back and finishing up all their academics and making decisions on which guys are going to go out and compete at the juniors or the seniors, you know, as well as our club guys. So pretty much just a, you know, short break and now focused on the club guys and the upcoming U.S. Nationals.
Big Ten champions, runner up at the NCAA championships, evaluate the season.
Yeah, I mean, it was, obviously, super proud of the team and the way our guys competed, throughout the entire season, especially as we headed into the postseason, Big Ten championships, is our first Big Ten title in almost 50 years. So, it was the highest point total we've had in the history of our program. It was really on the back of all 10 guys placing, all 10 guys scoring points, and racking up as many bonus points as we could. And we made a lot of things happen at the Big Ten championships and won a lot of, a lot of the close ones and some matches that we weren't supposed to win on paper. Every guy exceeded their seed or met their seed. We had a few number one seeds, but just from top to bottom, just a great performance. And I thought they did a great job refocusing and being prepared for the NCAAs. I thought we had a great performance at the NCAA championships. And the difference between first and second for us, as we've kind of gone in and really broken it down. It was really, it was like 3 to 5 matches that, we had winning situations even in those matches. And, we didn't get those done. And that was really the difference. But it was, razor thin margin, for the NCAAs as well. But, some a record year for us, really. It was the most points we scored at the NCAA championships as a program. It was the first time as a program record, 6 All-Americans and a national champion since, 1965 was the last time we had 6 All-Americans. Just overall, I think Miles Amin, becoming the first 5-time All-American and, most NCAA tournament wins. There's a lot of unique things about this season for a lot of teams with these extra COVID years and stuff. And I just thought, obviously great year, special team for us and overall just, proud of the guys.
Everyone has their own evaluation of what conference championships mean, whether it's Big Ten or another conference. How do you evaluate winning a conference championship?
I mean, I'd say, like, for me personally, even when I was an athlete at Michigan, like, I put as much emphasis on the Big Tens as I did the NCAA tournament. They were both, both really special to me as an athlete and a competitor. I've always viewed the Big Ten tournament equally as tough as the NCAA championships, sometimes even harder because it's just more condensed. I view it the same way as a coach. I mean, we put a lot of emphasis at Michigan on winning Big Ten championships, individually and as a team for all of our sports here, specifically in wrestling. It's the most competitive conference year in, year out by a lot. We take a lot of pride in that. If you look at this year, it was, the top three teams at the Big Tens, were the top three teams at the NCAA tournament. So it's really, it's very comparable. We fell not short at the NCAAs, but we did, we beat Penn State at the Big Tens. We beat Iowa at the Big Tens, those were the same teams we were competing to win an NCAA championship with in Detroit. So, for us, there's a lot of emphasis on winning both.
Sean, what is a Big Ten championship, a runner-up finish at the national championship? So what does that do for the program moving forward?
I mean, I think we've always been in the conversation as being an elite program and having elite wrestlers and we've always been, the last 4 years we've been a top 5 program. And when I first came back to Michigan, that was a big part of the conversation, a big part of the goal. Even when I was an assistant, getting our recruiting in order and getting our RTC and our club in order and putting the position putting the team in a position where we can compete for championships. And when you're, you know, when you have top five finishes, year in, year out, then you're competing for trophies and you're competing for titles. And, you know, I think this year just really solidified that, for us, obviously winning the Big Ten, a lot of teams, not teams necessarily, but, you know, a lot of people in wrestling circles that I think, you know, weren't that confident we could actually win. And they thought we'd be competitive, but, you know, I don't think they really believed that Michigan would actually win the Big Ten until we actually did it. And, you know, and then people took us out as, you know, more of a serious contender for an NCAA championship. And, you know, it impacts recruiting, it impacts fundraising, it impacts everything you're doing, really. And, you know, I know our alumni base and all the supporters around Michigan and our program, you know, they were really excited. I mean, my email inbox and my text messages, I mean, everything was just blowing up the entire month of March, you know, both after the Big Tens and after the NCAAs. And, you know, and people are just really excited about where the program's at.
Going forward, looking at where the program is at right now, you know, Andy talked about what it does for the program, but what does it do to host the NCAA championships? Does that add anything to your program?
Yeah, I think having it here in Detroit, I think it was great. It was great for our fan base, great for the state of Michigan and wrestling in this area. I think, you know, I think when you bring the NCAA wrestling championships to any city, it raises the awareness of the sport of wrestling quickly to anybody that's not already aware of it, because, you know, the town gets flooded, the restaurants get flooded, the media covers it. I mean, it's our NCAA championships. I think it's one of the greatest sporting events you could ever attend. And I know we had a lot of people this year that I know personally, you know, affiliated with Michigan and just this area. It was their first ever NCAA championships. And, you know, they just couldn't believe how electrifying all 3 days of wrestling were at the arena. You know, I think it's a special arena with, you know, it's a newer arena, so it's got great technology and you know, the entertainment value there, you know, at a high level. So, you know, overall, I think it was great for our wrestling community here in the Detroit area. And most of the feedback I got was pretty positive. I think if Detroit's excited to put a bid in and, you know, try to host again when the opportunity becomes available.
Let's look at your lineup a little bit. The one that stands out to me is Stevan Micic at 141, who had been a returning finalist, number one seed at the Olympics, but at 57 kilos, moves all the way up to 141 pounds. What challenges did he face moving up a weight class like that? Or two, if you go international, but he was at 133. But how did he face the challenges of moving up a weight class?
Yeah, he's a very technical wrestler, very skilled wrestler, always has been. But, you know, the extra COVID year pushing the Olympics back, you know, really, you know, I think had an impact on him physically, because he had to keep his weight down 57 kilos a year longer than he was planning. I mean, the plan was, you know, for him was really to, you know, compete in 2020 at 57 kilos and then move up to 61 and, you know, eventually have to move up, you know, slowly and gradually move up to 65 kilograms. Because, you know, it's the next Olympic weight. You know, unfortunately, there's nothing in between 57 and 65 in an Olympic year. So I know for him, 65 kilos, you know, was the goal after 57, you know, and Stevan didn't necessarily have plans to come back and do another college season. And that wasn't really a critical conversation until he got back from the Olympic Games in Tokyo and had some time to decompress. And, you know, and Miles to me made his decision to come back and wrestle. And, you know, and I had been already having some conversations with Stevan. And, you know, to be honest, Stevan's heart at this point is more in freestyle than folk style. You know, his commitment to come back and wrestle this college season was more tied to his, you know, his love and passion for Michigan wrestling and our coaching staff and our team. I think he put a lot of those things in front of, you know, his own desire to just focus on freestyle and focus on getting his weight up for 65 kilograms. So he made a pretty big sacrifice personally, to do this year for our team. And, you know, part of that was him wanting to continue to build his body into 65 kilos for, you know, for this next Olympic cycle. So, you know, it was a big jump because going from, you know, I mean, everything changes, you know, physically, the strength, the leverage points, you know, because he was always a pretty tall guy at 57 kilos. And, you know, now at 141, he was, you know, average in height. And he just, you know, he didn't put the weight and size on, I think, as quickly as you know, as we anticipated or hoped. And, you know, you know, as he got into the season, he was trying to make adjustments. You know, we were making a lot of adjustments just with, like, technically in his setups and leverage points, finishing, a lot of different things that, you know, little nuances of the sport that affect whether you get that finish or you don't, or a guy gets your legs or you don't. You know, and he had a rough, you know, some rough patches, and he had a couple, you know, a couple physical setbacks in the middle of the season that affected his ability to be on the mat, you know, and be in the weight room, and just some of those factors that came in the play. And it was a tough, you know, tough season, tough stretch in January and February. But, you know, he had a tough first match at the Big Tens, and that was, you know, a pivotal moment. You know, I had a pretty good heart-to-heart conversation after that match about where he was at in that Big Ten championships and the season, and needed to get his head and his heart and his desire connected to the right things. And I knew he would, and he did. And he came back and scored a lot of points on the backside in the Big Ten for us, and had a strong finish. And honestly, I thought he wrestled his best though down the stretch at the NCAA championships. I know he fell a little short in that match, the blood round, and lost in sudden victory, but he sure put together a strong finish, you know, given all the circumstances and moving up two weight classes for us.
Sean, when you've got a guy like him who's won at every level and wrestled at such a high level for such a long time, you know, setbacks like this are unfamiliar territory for a lot of people with Stevan's resume. How did you manage that throughout the season?
You know, it was tough. I mean, it takes everybody. I mean, it's the guys on the team, super supportive, staying positive. You know, his own family, his father, staying super positive with him, our staff, you know, it really was everybody just, you know, continuing to stay positive. And, in the end, the goals don't change, and his ability and, you know, and his talent doesn't change. So, you know, and Stevan, to be honest, he's like one of the most optimistic guys I've coached, super optimistic, just one of the most positive people you could be around. He's just a ton of fun to coach and have on the team. And it says a lot about his character, and it says a lot about his, you know, just his resilience and, you know, and his commitment to the team. Cause man, he had some tough, really tough moments, and he expects to win. And, you know, and it was a big adjustment. I think, you know, he got into some of these matches and you know, he started to feel the difference between, you know, 57 kilos and 141 pounds. And, you know, and it was, you know, there's some tough moments for him. So I think it says just a lot about his character and his determination and, you know, and just, you know, his passion for Michigan wrestling. I mean, that was a big reason he came back and did this. He didn't necessarily do that for himself.
I mean, talk about that. His first competitions were at Northwestern in 2014. I mean, that's insane how long he's been with collegiate wrestling.
Yeah. I mean, the you know, what's unique is he really only had four NCAA tournaments. You know, he had all that, but he only competed in the NCAAs four times. You know, and we've had other guys that, you know, are getting five. And all these extra guys. And there were a lot of six, seven. He was an eighth-year guy. I mean, yeah, I know there's a lot of mixed feelings about that, but, you know, these guys aren't creating the rules and the policies. And, you know, I think in 2020 when the NCAAs got cut short, and I think it's really unfortunate that the guys that were in that year didn't get that year. I mean, we didn't have a guy necessarily coming back affected by that, but we had guys currently in that group that I would have liked to seen them come back. And I know, you know, some other teams that we compete against, some of their top guys lost that last season. And, you know, I had to vote on that for Michigan. I voted that they all get that year again. And, you know, then the next year they made it a free year for everybody, but there were a lot of unique circumstances. And I think there were a lot of guys that took those six, seven, 8 years. And I think it speaks a lot about how much those guys love competing at the college level and how much they care about their programs and how invested they are in wanting their programs to win. You know, I think it's a time, you know, we'll probably never see this kind of situation again.
You talk about unique circumstances. Logan Massa, at the beginning of the school year, is teaching phys ed up in what Lansing, up around there. And
yeah,
commuting more than an hour every day. How did you guys handle that throughout the year? How did you get him back? And then how did you handle it throughout the season?
Yeah. So when Miles and Stevon made their decision to come back, you know, Logan was the next piece. And for me, those three came in as freshmen and kind of changed the trajectory of our program where we currently were at. They came in super talented, super hungry, great competitors. You know, they all three had top four finishes that year at the NCAAs as freshmen. And I think they kind of, you know, just kind of changed the trajectory of our room at the time and the expectation, you know, for, you know, freshmen, coming into our program and recruits. And those three are really special to me for a lot of reasons. So getting Logan back with those guys, I think, was going to be important. I started thinking about that in June, to be honest with you. But I also knew Logan, you know, he had, you know, him and his fiance had a baby in July. I knew that was coming. I knew that was going to be a major adjustment, major lifestyle adjustment in general for him as a person, and with his fiance. And he was going to need time, you know, to let his life adjust to that, having a child, working and providing for his family. So once we got a little later and Stevon and Miles made that decision, then I started having more in-depth conversations with Logan. Our staff started having conversations, and, you know, a lot of it was just communication and planning and figuring out, like, you know, how can we, you know, Logan's a great competitor and he loves Michigan wrestling. He wanted to do this, but we also had to figure out how can we do this and have it not negatively impact Logan as a father, or his family situation. So, you know, it just took a lot of planning, you know, some logistics, some flexibility on our side. I mean, how we ran a program this year doesn't reflect on how we would normally run it in a normal year, you know, because even with those guys, you know, we made a decision not to bring them back until second semester. You know, part of that was school related, but also part of that was just knowing where those guys were at in their college career and wanting to make sure that they were mentally and physically as fresh as possible in March. So that's, you know, that's part of the reason we didn't have any of those guys really start training and competing until second semester. And Logan's case had even more layers to it. So really it was just a lot of, you know, a lot of communication and a lot of planning and, you know, understanding what his needs were and making sure that we could meet all those needs, you know, so that physically and mentally he'd be in his best place. Cause, you know, I also knew the sacrifice he was making to commute and you know, I think most of these college guys have no idea what it's like to have a, you know, a newborn baby that is waking you up throughout the night and then getting up to train. And, you know, he was definitely on a different schedule and a different commitment level this year. And he really did an outstanding job throughout the whole season. I mean, he really did an unbelievable job balancing it all.
You have Nick Siriano for 1 year, comes away with an NCAA championship. What was it like having that guy in your program?
Yeah, Nick was, man, he was a blast. I mean, he came in, you know, ready to go for that second semester, you know, and we, you know, obviously we had a short amount of time to start building a really important relationship, as a staff with him and him with the guys on our team. You know, I think the way he handles himself in terms of the way he approaches training and all aspects of performance in terms of, you know, diet, recovery, you know, strength and conditioning training, everything he does, I mean, he's fanatical about it. And, you know, and he does it with a purpose, and the purpose is to win. And I think he immediately gained all the respect, quickly, just by the way he carries himself and the way he approaches everything. And then as our staff got to know him and work with him, I mean, he's just, man, he's a great kid. Super serious about, you know, being the best he can possibly be and being dominant. And I think he really enjoyed and appreciated just, you know, just the way, you know, we managed him as an athlete, the way, you know, we managed our team this year. He was really excited about coming in and being part of a pretty special team. He was a great leadoff guy at 125 for us. I mean, always, you know, he was always going out and, you know, scoring bonus points for the team, and you know, a guy that we knew we could count on to really, you know, really ignite the crowd right away. And you know, I just man, I really enjoyed this you know, this season with him. And yeah, I think we were all, you know, all thankful for everything he brought to the program and the way he competed for us this year.
Thinking back to the season, one of the moments that sticks out for me and that I'll always remember is when you wrestled Arizona State on the flow card. There was only four matches, but they're wearing masks. You guys aren't wearing masks. They were mandated because I think their county required it. How did you kind of make sense of that whole situation?
Yeah, that was a wild trip. It started out, I mean, it that was an event Flo put together for, you know, for us in Arizona State. And, you know, we'd been working on that for a while, and obviously Arizona State was going to have a great team, and we had a lot of great matchups between them and us. And it was kind of kicking off like the whole season around New Year's. And, you know, we flew in and, had a workout, and then, you know, they took us like these like Formula One go-kart tracks, you know, separately as teams. But I mean, we were, man, just having a ball. It was so fun. And, those go-karts can move. I mean, they are fast. And we had a great time with our team. It was a great experience. And then it was, you know, we woke up the next morning. It was competition morning. And I get an early morning. I'm up pretty early. And I get an early text from Zeke wanting to know if I'm available. And the minute I saw the text, actually it was me and, you know, one of the guys from Flo on the text. And he wanted to know if we were available for a call. And as soon as I got it, I knew, like, this is not going to be a good text. Like, something's going on. And we started to dive into it, like, literally that day leading up to the competition, trying to figure out how we were going to manage it, how many guys would actually be contact traced on their side, and what the county rules were, and if it was going to go back to, like, you know, Tempe's county, or if we could use the, you know, since we were in a different county in Austin, Texas, could we use the rules in that county? I mean, there was, like, we were trying to figure out, you know, every way we could possibly look at this, and still, you know, wrestle as many matches as we could. And obviously, Zeke was working closely with Arizona State on their side. And, you know, I was just kind of waiting to see what was possible. And, you know, and then communicating with, you know, our administration and our medical health people on our side. And I mean, there was just so many layers to it. And at the end, you know, it was like they were forced to wear masks. You know, we were not forced to wear masks on our side. And it was just an unfortunate set of circumstances that, you know, really, it didn't turn out to kick off the year the way we were all hoping to. And obviously for a lot of fans that were excited to watch that, I mean, it was, you know, it was just a, you know, from that standpoint, a huge disappointment. And, you know, nobody's more disappointed than the athletes and the coaches, and obviously, you know, the guys that want to compete out there. So it was definitely not the way we wanted to kick off the season and start the year. And at that point, honestly, like, that was right after the Midlands got shut down, and I was a little nervous about some things going on at that point, you know. And, you know, fortunately, right after that, it seemed like we pulled out of that, you know, that COVID situation, and the rest of the season went on really well without a hitch. So I'm really thankful for that, because there was a point there with all that going on, I was starting to get a little nervous about if there would be some other impacts about our college season and the NCAA tournament. Not so much if it happened, but just in terms of fans and, you know, some of those things that make our sport really special.
Yeah, can you imagine in 25 years someone pulling that up in the archives and wondering what the heck's going on here? They have masks and the other team doesn't. Be kind of a lot of explaining to do there.
Right. Yeah, that's like, our guys are not wearing masks. I mean, our people weren't forced. I don't think, you know, unfortunately, Zeke and his guys, they didn't have a choice. I know, you know, that was not necessarily by choice. That, you know, and give them credit, that was like, you know, they wanted to put matches on, and that was the only way they were going to be allowed to do it, is if they wore the mask. I mean, I felt bad that, you know, they had to do that, you know, but, you know, everyone wanted to at least have as many matches as we could.
Well, Andy's good at go-kart races, so I'd love to see you two guys match up at some point.
Yeah, that track there is unbelievable. We had a blast. Our guys had a ball.
Yeah, it was, Andy got a chance to do it once, and he found a way to get a second ride in, and he was really excited about it, I'll tell you. That's where he belongs, on the racetrack. I'd like to see him go pro. I'd like to see him go pro. So
hey, I will say that
one of the two of us on this show, Sean, that you're talking to, posted the fastest time on the Flow Wrestling team, and Kyle never got a chance to get behind the wheel, so you can figure out who had the fastest team on the Flow Wrestling team.
Yeah, I think we got to have to get, I know eventually we'll get back down there, and that, you know, I'm looking forward to it, because I tell you what, the day we went, it was actually like freezing cold. It was unbelievable. We leave Michigan. It was actually warmer in Michigan than it was in Austin the day we were there doing the go-karts. And it was so cold. Our guys were like, basically we had no gloves, because, you know, we thought we were going to Austin and the weather should be nice. And it wasn't even cold enough to wear gloves in Michigan that day. And it was so cold. The guys were taking off their socks and putting them on as gloves. And some guys didn't have, they didn't have full socks. So we were going into the track pro shop buying socks to wear as gloves to drive those cars, because our hands were freezing. We're going, you know, 50 miles an hour, and it's, you know, it's 30 degrees out here, and it's just freeze. But we got to get back down there and do that again. That was a blast.
That's a fun track.
Yeah, and so people know, this isn't just the run of the mill. These things go fast. I mean, they get some speed.
Mason Parrish like, he's the biggest guy on the track, you know, and of course, you know, he's like driving crazy. Like, he took me out once for sure. He's too much weight in that cart, but he was like, man, no fear. He took me out, spun me out quick.
Hey, Sean, how is NIL changing wrestling?
You know, I'd say it's changing wrestling by the day. I don't know exactly in all the different ways, but, you know, I think, you know, most of us coaches, I mean, it's an interesting time. I mean, I don't know how many coaches feel like it's a good thing or not, but it's definitely changing things by the day. And I feel like it's kind of like the Wild West to a degree, not just in wrestling, but all sports. But, all sports aren't being affected the way, you know, it's impacting wrestling, because, you know, it's very competitive. We got a lot of all of us have a lot of, just a lot of donors and alumni and all businesses and companies, and, you know, it's super competitive. So I think, you know, from what I've seen from the time it kicked in last July to where it's at, you know, where it's at, and some of the movement and some of the things that are happening right after this NCAA championships, I mean, it's, you know, I'm not really sure if it's a good thing or not. I got really mixed feelings on it. You know, I think obviously, you know, when you can increase value and increase money for, you know, our sport in general, it's a good thing. But I'm just not sure if that's going to be the outcome. And I'm not sure overall if it's good for all programs. And I have some real mixed feelings about that. And then, you know, when you put that whole piece on top of a, you know, more recent, you know, transfer portal, it just feels like the Wild West to a degree.
Do you think that this will get regulated? Do you think it will self-regulate? Where do you see this thing heading?
You know, it's hard to say. I really don't know. I mean, I think there's so many pieces of this, at least right now, that the NCAA does not want to touch, and they don't want to get involved with it. You know, because I think they feel like it's a risk for them to step in with any of this, you know, trying to regulate this NIL stuff. But it's like anything's possible with it. From what I've seen, like, anything's really possible. You know, now I think people got to start to think about, and I think all programs, you know, all coaches got to start to think about what's right for the athletes in our team, what's right for our program, our team chemistry. I mean, there's a lot of variables and a lot of things, you know, when you start to put, you know, there's a lot of different sides to, you know, incentives, and there's a lot of, you know, after effects, you know. So, you know, I think you have to start thinking about all those different things, and, you know, you can't just be thinking about, you know, the next 5 minutes. You got to think how some of the stuff might impact, you know, not just, you know, the one of the guys that are getting an NIL, but also how it's going to affect, you know, other guys on your team or other guys you're recruiting. And, you know, just saw a lot of different variables, and I'm not sure how much it's going to get regulated, at least in the near future. I mean, I hope they start putting some guardrails into it. I don't have all the answers of what that might look like, but I do, you know, I'd say overall, I have some concerns, you know, just as a coach, you know, feel a sense of responsibility, you know, for the sport, making sure, you know, I'm doing my part in making sure that it's moving forward in a positive direction. You know, obviously it affects all programs, and, you know, if transfer portal and NIL and all these different things, you know, if you know, I have some concerns that it may really continue to, you know, accelerate maybe some huge imbalances that we might have. And, yeah, I don't know. I just got some mixed feelings about it. And I'm not sure what the answers are. I think they got to relook at, you know, when you start changing rules and you add a transfer portal and NIL, I think just like some different rules. And again, I don't have the answers, but I think, you know, some of us coaches should probably get together and at least start talking about what some of these things could possibly look like. It would be not really restrict, but also, you know, keep in mind the overall, like, you know, overall importance and longevity of all the programs in our sport. And, you know, some of these rules probably need to get revisited by the NCAA, you know, not necessarily the transfer portal and NIL, but like different things. Like what is, you know, what does tampering look like? What does inducements look like? I mean, those are terms that are part of the NCAA rule book. But when you have significant change like this, maybe some of those definitions, some of those things need to be revisited and reevaluated, because I think all that stuff's changing quite a bit.
Think back to when you were a college athlete, you have a group of guys that you come in with, you probably saw them through to the end to your senior year, but now it seems like you're building just for that 1 year, that it's not about building a program, it's getting the best guys in right now to try to get a championship. Do you think that's an accurate portrayal of what wrestling is heading toward?
I don't know if it's necessarily, I mean, it might be, it's early. I don't know if I'd say that, you know, that's 100% accurate. I would say we've seen that with some programs over the last few years specifically, and over the last like 3-4 years, you know, since the transfer portal, but also with the COVID piece and all the extra years. And, you know, I would say for sure, more recently we've seen that. Whether how much it'll continue, you know, it's hard to say. And I think some programs may adopt that philosophy more. Some programs may not. And, you know, when you start talking about transfers, I mean, every school's got a different set of circumstances with admissions and, you know, what makes them attractive, from a wrestling standpoint or academically. I mean, there's just so many layers of this. That's why it's really so complicated. You know, like, I think there's some cases where I think the transfer portal is a good thing. And then I see a lot of cases where, you know, I don't think it's really that good for wrestling, or maybe not necessarily that good for our sport in general. You know, and I, we're in a position now where we don't make those rules. You know, we're going to have to live by them now. We got to operate in them. And, you know, my job is to help keep moving Michigan wrestling forward and, you know, having our best teams and our best performances that we can, and, you know, develop the guys we bring into our program, you know, beyond just being wrestlers and making sure they're getting the best degrees and, you know, becoming the best people they can through the sport and through their opportunities in college wrestling. But, you know, some of that will continue. I mean, even for us, you know, we had two transfers come in this past year into our program. And, you know, those are things I took serious, because we've always, you know, we've never been a school that has had a lot of transfers. And part of that's, you know, some academic things, but, you know, with admissions and different factors academically here. But I take it serious. And I take what it means to our program and the tradition of our program and 100 years of existence and a lot of our alumni and former coaches. And, you know, I made some calls to take the temperature on how a lot of our key, you know, former coaches and even some of our alums just take their temperature on and, you know, how they felt about this, because it's important to me. You know, I'm thankful to be here and be the head coach of Michigan wrestling right now, but, you know, there's going to be a lot of years of this program after me, and other people that run this program after me. I'm kind of like the gatekeeper right now, but, you know, how we handle this is, and the way it's viewed by, you know, all the people that Michigan wrestling is really important to, is also really important to me. So I think a lot of, you know, a lot of good coaches, smart coaches out there, probably also evaluating all those things and what it specifically means to their program and their program culture. And while at the same time, you know, our job is to win, you know.
You brought Kevin Jackson on board. You got him away from USA Wrestling. Fantastic developmental coach. What did he bring to the Michigan program this year?
Yeah, you know, I think everybody knows KJ and has followed him as a coach and a competitor. I mean, I think, you know, KJ lights up a room and he's had an impact everywhere he's been. I think he's just a real, you know, performance and athlete-minded coach. So he connected with our guys quickly. And, you know, throughout the season, he had a huge impact. And with our guys individually and the things that we gelled together as a staff, you know, I mean, even, at, you know, at the tail end of our, you know, of our postseason and you know, some of the interviews and you know, our team banquet, you know, a lot of our guys highlighted Kevin's impact and how thankful they were that, you know, for some of our guys, especially our seniors in their last year, Kevin was here and, it, you know, they, you know, they really felt like it made a difference for them and really benefited them. And, you know, for me, I saw it, you know, and I knew that would be the case because I had been fortunate enough to spend a lot of time around KJ, you know, through coaching with USA Wrestling Tours and, you know, and you know, different guys I coached on world and Olympic teams while Kevin was, you know, in those positions with USA Wrestling. So even some of these age group teams, and there's like four or five guys on our team now that Kevin and I, either Kevin and myself or Kevin and Josh Torella, coach together on cadet or junior world teams. And so some of, he had already had experience with some of our athletes that were here at Michigan. And, you know, so I knew that would be the case. And, you know, I look at it like, you know, I want the best coaches around our guys, the most experienced, the guys can have the greatest impact. I want them around our guys. And, you know, I view that as part of my job is putting together the absolute best staff I can possibly put together. And I think right now we have an incredible staff here at Michigan. And, you know, and you put Sergey Belovlazov on top of it, the RTC and the Clifton Wrestling Club. I mean, it's, there's no shortage of coaching resources here in Michigan.
Let's get your take on this. I got raked over the coals for saying that folkstyle wrestling was tougher than freestyle wrestling. I'm not saying it's better. I'm not saying it's more technical. I just think folkstyle wrestling is tougher. What do you think?
It's absolutely tougher. And most of the top freestyle guys in the country will say it's tougher. I mean, we have our guys, you know, our top freestyle guys, if they end up wrestling some college wrestling minutes, especially on the mat and stuff, that they all say it in our room, like, oh man, I forget how tough folkstyle is. And, you know, it's not that it's necessarily higher quality wrestling. I mean, when you get to the world stage, Olympics, world championships, I mean, the technical level and the tactical level is at a world-class level. I mean, it's as high as it gets. And I don't necessarily think all of folkstyle is as technical or as tactical or situational like that, you know, but the grind of the tough folkstyle match from takedown to finish to ride or escape, you know, over that, you know, 7 to, you know, even 10 minutes of an overtime period, it's different. You know, it's very tough. And, you know, I would agree. I mean, I've always thought that. I felt it as an athlete. And I think a lot of our, you know, a lot of our top RTC guys, college guys, club guys, you know, I laugh because they say in our room all the time.
When we went to Nursultan, when we think about that too, just think about the back rooms. I think I don't see the bumps and bruises. I think back to Miles Amin and that the big old bruise he had after the NCAA, I think, what, 2019, 2021, where he was just absolutely throttled. I think of those images too.
Yeah, I mean, that's what makes, you know, I talk about it a lot with our guys. You know, Miles is a perfect example. And Miles is, you know, the guy is an absolute warrior. Definitely one of the greatest competitors we've had come through the Michigan Wrestling program. And he never shies away from competition. I mean, he, you know, like even this year, like right after the NCAAs, boom, right over to European Championships, wins a gold medal. And, you know, but I talk about it all the time. Honestly, I honestly feel because I've experienced, you know, being part of, you know, coaching world teams, coaching Olympics, and especially as those events are, And from a performance standpoint, as special as winning those events are, competing in the NCAA championships, you know, on a college team, in that environment, in that arena, it's really special. And these guys know it and they talk about it. And, you know, and that's a big reason, you know, like Miles and Stevan and Logan, that's a big reason those guys want to come back. And Miles has talked about it all the time. And being part of the team and being part of the NCAA championships and competing in that environment, tough as college wrestling is, that's what makes our championship so special. And it's different. It's just a different experience than, you know, world championships or even Olympics. I mean, those are special in a different way. But the NCAA championships, man, that's just a really special event, and it is tough.
In Detroit at the NCAA championships this year, I saw Tony Roby of Virginia Tech. He's the head coach. I say, hey, has anyone mistaken you for Sean Bormet yet? And nobody had. He said, because he's in the tunnel and pretty much all the coaches know who he is. But he also said that he gets mistaken for Cale Sanderson. Have you ever had that happen?
I have. It's usually either Tony or Cale, especially, you know, when we're out recruiting or, you know, at an arena watching state championships. I've gotten it quite a bit. You know, definitely, probably Tony a little more, but I've definitely had a handful of occasions with Cale. Same thing. Usually I'm sitting down, though, because he's quite a bit taller. But both times I've been sitting in a restaurant recently where somebody has come up to me and started telling me some stories or, you know, just about, you know, what a great job you did with, you know, David Taylor over at the Olympics and, you know, and I usually I'll listen. I'll go along with it for a few minutes. I always tell Cale, hey, man, we got to make sure our relationship stays strong, because I usually play along with that for a while, and I can really set you up if we don't stay.
That's fantastic. I mean, have you ever signed an autograph in his stead?
No.
Okay.
No, I don't play along that far.
All right. I was kind of hoping maybe you just snuck one in there. But, hey, we're going to let you go. I just want to have you mention one thing. We asked you this when you were on the show last time, but Cliff Keen Athletic, they're the sponsor of the show. I know you're very well connected with them. If you would, just talk about them and what a great company, what a great job they do.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have, they run their company the right way. And, you know, I think they make a lot of decisions sometimes. I think it's for them, it's always parallel, you know, what's right for their company. And it's got to be aligned with what's right for the sport of wrestling in general. And, you know, I know, you know, for us, they've always been just unbelievably supportive. I've felt it definitely since I've been a head coach here, you know, for Michigan wrestling. And I've seen what they do across the country for youth wrestling. The development, the betterment of all levels of wrestling in our country. You know, but even this year, we had our 100th anniversary, and we're coming off COVID and a lot of deficits with the COVID budget. And there's some special things that we were hoping and planning to do as a program this year with our Cliff Keen bobbleheads, and just a lot of different really nice, fun things to kind of wrap around this season and our team. And, you know, Tom Keen and his family and Cliff Keen Athletics, they stepped up right away, and, you know, they made sure, you know, that any budget restraints wouldn't be an issue in terms of things that they could participate in terms of, you know, warm-ups and bobbleheads and singlets and just special 100-year things that, you know, that they know would be important. You know, Coach Cliff Keen was still here, and they wanted to make sure that our guys could have that kind of experience this season. So just a first-class family and, you know, super passionate about the sport across the board at all levels.
Appreciate that insight. We're going to start to work on a NIL deal for Cale, Tony Roby, and Sean Bormet. We won't know which one until it's over.
Yeah, I'm all for it. Let's go.
Be kind of fun. Yeah, bobblehead doll, we'll just make it all the same, or we'll just put a different name on it.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Hey, all the best. We'll see you out in Las Vegas for the U.S. Open, and can't wait to see what's next for the Wolverines.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys.
Thanks.
Spring brings new life, and the sport of wrestling is no exception. This spring, get into the club, freestyle, and even folk style seasons with some fresh new training and lifestyle gear from Cliff Keen. Cliff Keen's joggers are buttery soft and fit just so right. and their collab with Dry Release offers industry best training shirts and shorts that bring you comfort and performance in the gym, on the mats, or simply hanging out with your friends. On the Mat listeners can save big at CliffKeen.com too. Go to CliffKeen.com and use coupon code ONTHEMAT, one word, at checkout and take 20% off your order. Yep, coupon code ONTHEMAT gets you 20% off. Go to CliffKeen.com and click Shop Wrestling.
Sean Bormette reflecting on the season, looking ahead to what's happening. Of course, the NIL is the hot topic, and he used language that I used in him saying it's the Wild West, and that's certainly what it feels like as we go along. I don't think anyone can predict just what he said. We try to have that crystal ball and think about what it's going to look like, but I think with where it is right now, it's not even a year old, and we're still having questions about what it's going to look like, but I can certainly tell you that college sports is going to look a lot different in 10 years than what it does right now.
What kind of character you think you would have been in the Wild West?
Whew. I want to say Marty McFly from Back to the Future 3. That would be...
3?
Yeah, because he went to the Wild West.
Okay.
So that would be the character I'd want to be. Yeah, kind of a... take the DeLorean back. That'd be a lot of fun to do that. Have you seen Back to the Future 3?
I'm sure I have. Okay. Yeah, I know I have. Okay. I know I have.
But
it's like they got progressively worse, right?
Well,
like they should have just stopped at one.
They maybe should have. I like all three just because I like time travel, but the first one's always going to be the best, which is typical for these types of franchises. Awesome. But it's fun to be able to talk with Sean. Fantastic season for him. Big Ten champions, runner-up at the NCAA championships. Any final thoughts, Andrew?
No, just really appreciate you pointing out my go-kart prowess.
Well...
It's a proud accomplishment. I know that James Dean Rader was not happy with the fact that I edged him out for the top spot on the leaderboard there.
Well, I know watching you the second time when you had a chance, I've never seen you happier. I mean, you had a big smile. You were walking with a purpose. You had the helmet. You were not going to be denied. It was like one of those situations where someone's going to get a gold medal at the Olympics. You were,
yeah, but
get
I
that
was slower
race.
That time around. The tires were wearing out.
You smoked everyone. There wasn't even one close to you in that. That's why, because you didn't have any competition pushing you. That's the big reason. I would think though, if you put a helmet on and Sean Bormette does, we wouldn't be able to tell the difference. We'd be like, which one's Sean? Which one's Andy? You guys kind of look the same too if you had helmets on. Which is a compliment.
Doesn't everybody look the same wearing a helmet?
Well,
for the most part?
Probably. Yeah, it's probably true. But I'd like to think that I could pick you guys out even without. Hey, we've had a great show. Sean Bormette on the show. For Andrew Hamilton and Sean Bormette, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening to On the Mat.